Time now for the Six Rings Postgame Show, presented by McFarlane Energy. Breaking down everything Patriots. Now, here's Fitzy and Hart on WEEI.
How much importance that game will have depends on the outcome right here.
If it's man-to-man, watch Taylor. Watch them pick for Taylor to the flat.
Richardson looking. Richardson, end zone. It is caught for the Indianapolis touchdown. Alec Pierce able to squeeze it. And the Indianapolis Colts, for the moment, keeping their offense on the field.
Take some big ones sometimes. Coach for the dub. And winning time. And that's exactly what the Spike Man, as Gronk likes to call him, pulled out there. Shane Steichen electing to go for two and not just settling on the extra point to send it to overtime. He thought, no, my team's got the momentum. We just went 19 for 80. I'm going to score them both. That's right. Pulled a Grant Williams and said he was going to make them both, and he did right there.
Except he fulfilled his promise.
He did fulfill his promise.
And he's not out for the year with a torn ACL.
That's also true. And they only had to commit one egregious chop block on the penalty. Or
oh,
high-low.
Boy. What we're doing.
Yep. It's okay. But if it was a Chiefs game.
You want some cheese with that wine?
Actually, you know what?
It's sad.
Yes, you know how much I enjoy cheese, Andy, like the cave-aged Gouda.
Oh, I know.
Perhaps, hey, you know what? I did get visited by some relatives from Wisconsin during the Thanksgiving holiday. And they always bring delicious cheese with them. They brought a wonderful bag of, because cheese travels. Okay, that'll. Yep, Braverman's definitely using that drop. It does. Well, it's aged, especially the ones that are aged. It's okay. You can tuck it in the old carry-on. It's fine. Cheese is fine.
Okay.
It's okay. You can
do
that.
I believe you.
I smuggled back a whole deep dish when I was out in Chicago a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't think that's okay. It's like that guy that was traveling with the clothes soaked in meth.
It's a little different, but, you know, to each his own, whatever you get your jollies with. And they brought a 7-year aged cheddar. Fantastic.
Moldy?
No, it just crumbles apart. Yeah, I mean, it molds, and they take that off, and it's like all the good stuff gets driven into it. So it
smells like feet.
No, it doesn't smell like feet. By the way, smelling, though, there is some candle company that has dropped off this candle in our studio here, in our beautiful, safe, Brighton, Massachusetts studios.
Yes.
It is a cannabis candle. I took the top off and I smelled it and almost fell over. It is Gwyneth Paltrow's goop candle. Ain't got nothing on this thing. Holy smokes.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think I would rather smell the Regina candle than this weed candle. Wow.
Okay. So is it overpowering our Christmas tree? Because that was the scent that was.
No, this is not a real Christmas tree, though, is it?
Yeah, it is.
It is?
Now, I'm guessing no one's
watered it. You seriously didn't walk in the studio and get a giant whiff of Christmas?
I got a little bit. Not a ton.
Could be because no one's watered it since Wednesday.
That would... You know what? Then I'm going to water it on the next commercial break.
You should. You probably should.
Probably should.
I'm not sure it's been watered in
4
minutes.
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it has been. It's a nice-looking tree, though. Just got ours yesterday as well. Beautiful tree.
Shout out to the Greg Hill Show for picking it out.
Did Greg pick this one out? Who paid for it?
Craig, Curtis, Courtney,
They all chipped in?
Pavement? I have no idea. But the picking of the tree, yes.
How lovely. That's a very nice looking tree.
I would say it's the biggest one we've had.
I think they've tried to festify the studios here, and they have done a pretty good job of it. It's nice to see. Be nice, of course, if I saw all these D'Angelo Sandwich Tuesday bags, and maybe there were some extra Sammies laying around for us.
Oh, you got to talk to Jones and Keefe on that one.
Those go pretty fast. If they make it to the afternoon show, they don't make it beyond.
I mean, you can't leave a number 9 or like a nice chicken pocket
for your old 5
your
days.
I'm not above much.
Jesus. Good Lord.
Come on now. Just a quick update on how the postgame show will carry on and proceed. In moments, we will hear from our friend Megan Onnellini, fresh from the stadium, filing her post-game report at WEEI.com. She was in the locker room, so we can do our vibe check with Mego. And then right after that, the Drake May report card from Chris Scheim. Scheim Time himself, who did an excellent job filling in for Arcand on the pregame show today, our Football Sunday program. I'll be filling in tomorrow for Arcand down at the stadium with Andy. Andy, quick question. Do you think Drake May is going to call in tomorrow, or do you think he's going to be there in person with us?
I'm hoping he'll be there in person, but I'm concerned it'll be a call-in.
I have a feeling it's going to be a call, too. I bet everyone's going to go in for the morning meetings and be like, well, I'm off to Cancun.
Yeah, I am a little bit concerned. Although there is actually, I believe, media access on Tuesday. I don't think they're off.
Really?
So we may luck out.
It'd be a good day to stretch, get a workout in, get some treatments before the break.
Turn the page to the bye. Yep. Make sure you clean up everything that went wrong against the Colts. So I'm hopeful because it's a much better interview.
Oh yeah,
when he's in person, anybody is a better interview when he's in person. And so I'm going to cross my fingers and maybe beg PR to get him in person.
Well, that'll be just dandy, won't it? Tomorrow on the afternoon show with Arcand and Hart. Tomorrow, Hart and Fitzy. It's like a reverse six rings, and you can take the steering wheel tomorrow, and we'll see how that goes.
Jesus, take the wheel. Oh,
wow. All right. It's like we just turned on Magic 106.7 for a second. All right. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number if you'd like to call in and talk anything New England Patriots related following their frustrating last-second defeat with a successful Anthony Richardson drive and two-point conversion. 25-24 was your score at the Razor today. A lot of other exciting games going on in the NFL Week 13. Let's catch you up on all those scores and everything else you need to know from the Bruins, the Celtics, and more with a guy who's all over the score. That would be Joe Braverman.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Well, it came down to the wire, but it was a Patriots loss as they fall to the Colts at Gillette. 25-24, your final score. The issues today were in the red zone as they finished 2-for-6 with two field goals on their trips inside the 20. Anthony Richardson led a 19-play, 80-yard drive, ending in a two-point conversion to take the lead for Indy with 12 seconds left. Drake May had an accurate day. He finished 24 of 30 for 228 yards. He threw a touchdown to Austin Hooper. He also threw an interception, which wasn't quite his fault. It was batted around by Hunter Henry. The Pats now head into their bye week at 3-10. Their next game will be 2 weeks from tonight. They'll be in Arizona taking on the Cardinals. Some other scores in the NFL for Week 13. The Steelers won a shootout over the Cincinnati Bengals 44-38. The Texans beat the Jaguars in a tension-filled battle, 23-30. The Vikings just squeaked past the aforementioned Cardinals, 23-22. The Seahawks knocked off the Jets, 26-21. And in some games that are going on right now, the Eagles in the third quarter on top of the Ravens, 14-12. The Sunday slate of games wraps up with the 49ers taking on the Bills from snowy Orchard Park. You can listen to Westwood One's coverage of Sunday Night Football right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM with coverage beginning at 7:30 following the Six Rings postgame show. The Bruins are playing their centennial game at TD Garden against the Montreal Canadiens, and it is about 15 minutes left in the third period. Bruins lead it 5-2 over Montreal. Three first-period goals in a minute 15 span by Charlie McAvoy, David Pastrnak, and Charlie Coyle. McAvoy had another one in the second, 38 seconds in, and 21 seconds into the third. Charlie Coyle scored it yet again. So Coyle's got two, and McAvoy has got two, and they lead by three at TD Garden. And in a battle for first in the Eastern Conference, it's the Celtics taking on the Cavaliers in Cleveland. No Jaylen Brown and no Derek White. Jaylen has an illness. Derek White has a right foot sprain. They are just getting underway in Cleveland, and it is 15-13 with 5.5 minutes left in the first quarter. Leading scorer right now is Kristaps Porzingis. He's got 7 points on 3 of 4 shooting. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Jesus Help This Show should be the name of Mego's segment. Joining us now, after posting her column, her review of today's action at the stadium at WEEI.com, talking to some of the players, with her home game vibe check, the one and only Miss Megan Ottolini from Weekends, WEEI.com, the evening program, and so much more. Mego, how we feeling?
I'm feeling okay. I think I'm feeling better than most of the Patriots. But I think overall, everybody's pretty excited to be going into the bye week.
Yeah, Joe Braverman, producer extraordinaire of the postgame show here, and I were just discussing that there was some interest from fans after the game to some weigh in with some positive feelings. They're happy to see Drake developing, of course, continuing with his shocking rookie year accuracy, 24 out of 30 today, moving well once again. Some wanted to weigh in with their disappointment over the defense giving it up on a 19-play, 80-yard Anthony Richardson touchdown drive plus the two-point conversion. And then after that, it feels like bye week apathy or relief or a combination therein have set in. Well, what was the feeling you got down at the stadium?
So I would say that everyone who is wondering if the locker room was appropriately despondent after that loss, yeah, I would say they were.
Oh, they were.
A very, very, very quiet locker room, very sad locker room. I honestly think that has a lot to do with losing a game in the final moments. That's just kind of how that transfers over to guys walking to the locker room and feeling like, ugh, it just got away. They yeah. know that's a game that they should have won. And the thing that jumped out to me that I wrote about is it just is starting to feel like the team has run out of answers to go to. They've run out of solutions. And even in talking to, like, Austin Hooper at his locker postgame, he kept using this term FUBAR. Have you ever heard FUBAR?
Most certainly have, and I am not allowed on the public airwaves to explain what it stands for.
Right. So for those who don't know, we'll say it's spelled up beyond any recognition. And he was saying that they're just getting plagued by plays turning into that. And I think it's a little bit of column A and column B, being that column A, guys on the line, on the offensive line, guys defensively with pass interference, they're trying to make up for what they know is a gap in the talent that between them and what's on the other side with the other team. And the other side, column B, I have to imagine is partly the coaching during the week and the preparation, just because we continue to see these repeat mistakes with the number of penalties. And so, you know, I think everybody's happy to go into the bye week, but it was just a sad locker room where it felt like a lot of guys looking around being like, we practice hard. I don't really know what happens here on game days.
So, Mego, we all know it sucks to lose for everybody on the team, but as outsiders, we tend to pin the loss on one of two people, or maybe a pair of people, and that's the head coach and the quarterback, right? Wins and losses are credited to those two guys. Which guy in that duo, that rookie duo, Gerard Mayo and Drake May, do you think the losing is wearing on more heavily?
Wearing on, I'm trying to get the nature of the question. Are you asking like who's wearing it more, or who is it?
No.
Who
is it wearing on more heavily? Who is it taking a toll on? Whose shoulders are drooping more? Because I think they both want to win and expect to win, and they aren't winning.
I'll say this: I think that Drake May seemed pretty pissed off in the postgame. He seems pretty frustrated, and I don't mean that in like a bratty sense or anything like that at all. He just seems genuinely very disappointed with the way that they're coming out of these games without wins. And I think some of that is related to being in a game that was as close as this one was and feeling like there was the opportunity at the end, the crazy, what would have been a record setting field goal. But even before that, the inability to make that final defensive stand. You know, I think it probably is just starting to feel to him like he can go out there, not have a perfect game, but probably, I would say, one of the top two, if not the best game of his season so far. And it's just not enough. And I can't even imagine the level of frustration that I would feel when I'm doing everything that is even beyond the expectation of what people had for me coming in. And as the weeks go on and having a huge bounce back game after what was probably the biggest struggle he's had other than the London game this season, last week in Miami, to come back and then have your best game. And it just goes like that. I would be pissed off, and that's how he looks.
Megan Ottolini from WEI.com and our broadcast family here joining us with her check-in from the stadium on the Six Rings postgame show. So you're saying that the locker room was emotionally understated, unlike the... I wonder if there was like a team-wide memo, like, guys, if you lose, would you please look sad? Because this is not coming across well for the team. I doubt that was the case as well. You know, and as far as, you know, Gerard Mayo owning the desire to go for the 68-yard field goal, which, again, no one has ever done before. There were 13 previous attempts at a 68-yard field goal. The world is now 0 for 14 on 68-yard field goal attempts. Did you get any feel from anyone else, like, man, I wish we just gave Drake a chance. Because Drake in the postgame, where you described him as a little bit pissed off, he definitely kind of swallowed how he really feels about that and said, you know, coach makes those plays. Looks like Mayo kind of, he owned it and said, I kind of do those things. I made that call myself, and obviously it didn't pan out.
Yeah, I think that if you ask any guy personally, they want the opportunity to go out and be the one who was able to execute the game-winning drive. For me, it wasn't even so much the field goal, which I think was kind of ridiculous, like a ridiculous decision. But, and I'm sure you guys feel this way too, the whole eight-second scenario leading up to that, where they're doing these over-the-middle kind of intermediate at best passes, and I'm like, you know that Drake has the arm. I understand doing one of those, but doing them back to back and just kind of sitting in the middle of the field and eating up so much of the clock of that's more what I didn't understand. Mm. Why not take a shot? I mean, it's probably somewhere close to the same probability, if you're going to play that game, as being the first one to make a 68-yard field goal when Joey Sly shanked it at the end of the first half.
So there were a lot of things to like in this game. Where I started the show. Talk about Drake May. But there were other aspects in it. What, if I said, Mego, give me your two favorite things that happened in this game that the Patriots did actually lead until, whatever, 12 seconds left. What were some of the things you liked that you saw today?
Andy, am I being too negative for you? Is that what this is?
Well, on top of Fitzy being very negative, I actually
thought it was... I'm disappointed. I'm a fan,
well,
damn it.
They competed. I thought they did some real, like, it felt like they should have won the game, and that's why I understand the disappointment. But part of the reason you're disappointed is because they did good things for a lot of the game, especially offensively, the ground game. I thought both tight ends made some plays. Christian Gonzalez had a beautiful interception that, at the time, I thought might actually end the game, but what an idiot I was. I didn't know they were going to go a quick three and out, and there was a lot of football to be played. But, you know, some of the positives that may have stood out to you.
Sure. So I'll give you two, and I'll just basically give you two guys, and that would be Antonio Gibson and Kayshon Booty. I think as we look across this, what will probably be a largely forgotten season, I look at Drake May and Christian Gonzalez as your bona fide playmakers. Like, they are really the only two straight up playmakers that you have on the roster in terms of elite or around elite talent. Kayshon Booty's been working really hard. And so I think he can serve as a great, you know, we say lead by example, but really changing his approach, and we've talked about this before, his approach to his role on the team and then being able to reap the benefits of that on game day. Like, you got to see a lot of that today. And I'm genuinely very happy to see that for him, because he's somebody who's put in the work. And then he goes out there and it's not like all of a sudden, oh, I'm just this naturally great receiver, so it just pops off for me because I get on the same page as the quarterback. Like, I think it's been months and months of work that he's put in at this point. And then Antonio Gibson is somebody who I was very high on when they brought him in from the Commanders from free agency, and has had a couple of games where he just struggles to get anything going in the ground game. And it seemed like he got a little bit of momentum being able to be in special teams in addition to being the second back. And so, you know, obviously he has the touchdown, which they really needed after the goofy DeMario Douglas flag that came right before that. And so I would say both of those guys had an outstanding day for them individually. And it's performances like that that you look at and go, these are complementary pieces that you could carry forward. Again, I think the bigger struggle for the Patriots when they're looking at who they're going to be next year and in the offseason, you have a lot of guys who can be really nice complementary pieces, but you only have two playmakers and they're on opposite sides of the ball, and you need to put some more support around them.
Yeah, that's one of the more positive aspects of my contributions to the postgame earlier. Mego was saying, you know, in an effort to try to figure out who's going to be part of the solution, who's going to be a positive part of the rebuild next year. I like Gibson. I still think they need a bit more of a traditional, smaller Deion Lewis, Shane Vereen type of third down back. But I like his contributions, always runs hard. And Hooper, who the aforementioned Austin Hooper as well, like, who among us wouldn't take 4 for 40 every other week from your number two tight end with a handful, if not several touchdowns on the season? Like, he's got a nice little connection. Drake Drake May to the tight ends and with his alternative backs is a bit of a thing. But the glaring need for a wide receiver one or just a Mr. Dependable is just outrageous at this point.
Yeah, and I just got to give props to Booty for working for that. But I am curious, Andy, because I saw you tweet about it, and it was something that jumped out to me immediately as well, so I responded to it, about the Austin Hooper touchdown, the reception he had, that the positioning of Jalen Polk behind him was so odd that in the way that Polk had his hands out, it was almost like one of those things where somebody, a stranger, is waving to you, so you wave, and then you realize that they're waving to someone in front of you. You know, like that's how it looked. That's how weird that whole play, when I kept watching the replay, looked to me. And so I just have a lot of questions. Some of the issues that they seem to have on offense, you can't just say that it's a Van Pelt thing or that it's just a talent thing. I mean, some of this is like, you wonder about the spacing, if guys are even in the right spots. And that's a really tough place to be talking about these guys when now we're in December.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's... See, it was funny. Offensively, they had a weird day. They put up some nice numbers. They ran the ball. They threw the ball. Early on, there was that creativity with the Marcus Jones read option, which led to the inside pitch to one of the tight ends, Hooper maybe. And I was like, ooh, they're coming to play today. I like that. That's a little creativity. Eye candy, Marcus Jones getting out there. And then there's other plays where it's like, yeah, even when it's successful, it doesn't look quite right. And my read on that play you just brought up was, I think Jalen Polk was supposed to run a fade to the back pylon, and Hooper was running sort of a flag to the front pylon, but I think you're right. Polk looked back, saw the ball in the air, thought it was to him, cut his route short, and then was like, oh, it's not to me. Oh, I shouldn't have stopped. Oh, like, they're just always not quite perfect in their execution. Even there was a third down play early with the receivers all crossing that just didn't seem like the timing and the spacing was proper. They're not quite there. It's like one step forward where you get a good feeling about some of the offensive execution, and then a couple little things where they just don't quite. Even the Jacoby Brissett, bring him in. Oh, the defense is going to think that it's a QB sneak, but we're really going to run a quick jet sweep to Bourne. So I like some things, but they're not quite there, and I do think some of that is personnel-related, like the touchdown. I think Polk is the one who screwed that up. We've had AVP throw DeMario Douglas under the bus a little bit the last couple weeks on some adjustments or spacings or things. So there's definitely questions there, which leads to a long-winded question from me after I give you lots of opinion in there. where are you on Alex Van... You did, but where are you on Alex Van Pelt? Because I feel like there's this ongoing evolution. I think we've all accepted Mayo's going to be back. Where are you in your ongoing evolution of trust with Alex Van Pelt?
You know, I think part of why it's stronger is just in talking to him week after week and what an even-keeled guy he is.
Yep.
He seems very secure in his position with the Patriots, and his thought process and his handling of the offense. And you just kind of innately trust somebody like that to an extent. I got to be honest, I just don't love his style of offense. So it's never going to totally appeal to me. I get kind of frustrated with it, especially when, as we just talked about, guys are not on the same page, and that style of offense depends so much on the chemistry and the timing, and it just starts to look janky because the personnel's not there, or they're not committed, or they don't understand it properly week in and week out, and I get frustrated with that. All this to say, the best attribute that Alex Van Pelt has is what he can show with Drake May. And I can't say enough about how good Drake looked today and how impressed I am that he, again, was able to do that after having a not great week last week comparatively to who he's been in the season overall. But if you're asking me, like, should Alex Van Pelt definitely be back next year, I'm just kind of looking around the league and thinking, well, if there's somebody who has a really great offensive mind, or there's, I don't know, somebody by the name of Brian Daboll who could shake loose and would be willing to
come
back here.
Could you be more specific on the name of that person, please?
It's really hard to think about what Drake could do with somebody who's even greater than Alex Van Pelt. And that's the thing. It's like I feel bad because I don't think he's like coached himself out of the job by any means. And I think he's improved a lot as a play caller over the last couple of weeks, even. I see a lot of creativity from him. I wish he would stop taking Drake May out of his trick plays, but you know, we see a lot of creativity. And so I'd be fine if we find out that he's coming back next year. I'd say, okay, he's got a great relationship with Drake seemingly. And, you know, he'll probably get better personnel and it'll look better than it did in year one. But if Daboll is loose and you can get him in here, I'm kind of like, why wouldn't you do that?
I'm with you. It's not my favorite kind of offense as well, but I believe in the man just the same. So I totally understand what you're saying, Mego. And also, we've never seen the guy coach an offense in New England with elite talent around him, save for the quarterback, who we truly believe is something special in Blossom right now. So we'll keep in touch on that. Where can we hear you this week? What do we got going on?
Okay, so let's see. Tomorrow night, I will be on. I'm not sure who with. I got to check on that because I know that you're filling in for Arcan, who's sick for like the 3,000th time this year.
Yeah, that's right.
And his giant baby who gets him sick all the time. It was very adorable, though. And then you can find me on the Slam podcast. We're going to be doing a ton of content this week because, of course, last week was a holiday week. We got the NBA Cup. We're going to be looking at, I'm sure, the Cleveland game tonight and then everything going forward for the rest of this week. So you can find me on there for sure.
Great job, as always. We love hearing from you on the post game with the fresh perspective from the locker room and all things Patriots. Give her a follow at @Megan_Ottolini. Thanks, Mego. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
See you.
Megan Ottolini joining the Six Rings postgame show with the vibe check following the Patriots' loss at home to the Colts. 617-779-7937 is your telephone number. Coming up, let's hear from the world's biggest Drake May fan, Chris Schein, from the morning show with the Drake May report card. It's coming up next.
Formation and catching the Patriots' defense off guard. May climbs the pocket. He's going to run. May's got a first down and more. May still going. Sprung free by the late block. He's going to get all the way down to the Colts 21.
You want it. You need it. You love it. The Drake May report card, where each and every week, Chris Skime, as it says right here on the call screener. Excuse me. S-C-H.
What are we doing here? Does professionalism check out at 6:45 or something?
Oh, so now we're going to deign with professionalism? Dabble in acting like adults, finally? It says, oh, see, now it's been changed. So in the time that you were yelling at me when you were adult-splaining how to do a radio show, Mr. Fancy Afternoon Guy, it said S-C-H-Y-M-E. I like Skime. Now I'm going to call him Skime. Or Chris Skime. So you've been a lot of things, right? You've been Skime. You've been Scrim. I think Scrim may have been your best nickname. Have there been any other misappropriations of your last name, Scheimer?
There's been so many that I can't count. One of my personal favorites, though, when I was 12 years old, I went to an old Brockton Rocks game, like the Independent League team. Grandfather tried to get my name up on the big board, and somehow they added an L to my last name and called me Christopher Schlime. So that was fun.
Schlime. I love it. Well, speaking of slime, that's exactly what the Patriots left draped all over the field. Ooh, Bucky Irving, anytime touchdown alert. Sorry, that was the squirrel moment
Focus.
Of the day. There. I'm watching. Everyone that's listening right now is like, you know what? I like this Fitzy guy. He gets distracted by TV. He burps on the air. He's a real person, damn it. Getting excited about getting home, getting a shower, getting that delicious beer. All right, Schlime, tough ending to the game today, but by and large, 24 out of 30, that first explosive run, another great day for your boy. Give me the overall takeaway, or rather, the first adjective that comes to mind in describing Drake May's efforts today.
I would say they were excellent. I thought Drake was great today. I don't think he was like the least of the team's problems. I think that his biggest mistake all game was making sure Pop Douglas wasn't set before moving in motion there. Like that interception, I don't care. People can throw all the stats they want at me that Drake May now has an interception in five straight games. That interception was not his fault. It hit Hunter Henry directly in the hands. Unlucky bounce, and it gets picked off. Like, it somehow stays on his thigh and gets kicked up in the air, and the guy grabs it. And so, like, that's, again, that's, Drake May put it in the right spot. I thought he was on point today, accuracy-wise. I thought he was great. I was okay with a few of the sacks that he took. You know, sometimes, again, sometimes guys are just covered. There was the one early in the game. I think it was the first or second drive. They're in the red zone. It's third down. He drops back, tries to hit a guy on a mesh coverage. But the Colts were playing zone. They passed it off great. There was literally just nowhere to throw the football. He held on to it, took the sack, took the field goal, got off the field. Like, that's an okay sack to take. It's not a bad sack. It keeps, you're still in field goal range. You're not losing anything there. Joey Sly actually hit that one, which was good. And so, overall, I thought Drake played excellent today. I would say this and the Rams game were the two best games he's played so far as a professional.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really liked the performance today. My concern comes from the result. And what I mean by that is, I think even before he started a game, he talked about, I'm starting because this team needs wins. We need to win. He brings up winning a lot, which I want. I want guys that want to win. They're not winning. And I wonder, do you think there's any negative to that? Is there going to be a growing frustration? Because if we're being honest, he may not taste victory again the rest of this season, and he seems like a legit competitor that's going to wear on. Do you have any concerns with him learning to deal with losing, accepting losing, not winning, whatever that dynamic is?
I wouldn't say concern is the right word. I do feel bad, though, because I know he is going to be frustrated by this. Like, there's no doubt in my mind it is going to irk him every single day that they aren't able to get out there and get wins. That interception against Tennessee, that interception against the Rams, the results of this game are all going to bother him a lot because he knows those were winnable moments and winnable opportunities there, and they just weren't able to execute. But, I mean, Mego and I talked a lot about this weekend, and it just feels like Drake is going to run into a lot of roadblocks because of what's around him. The lack of talent, the inexperience in the coaching, and it's going to be imperative that he continues to push through those roadblocks. It's going to take him a little bit longer to kind of ascend than we may have wanted to and we may think he deserves because he's so talented, but he is going to need to work through those. I think mentally he's able to. Like, he has the right mindset. He has the right attitude. He dealt with some losing at UNC. Like, they weren't perfect. They weren't undefeated. You know, they weren't national champions like Michigan. He dealt with some bad, you know, bad teammates, but bad players around him, bad personnel, I would say. And he was able to kind of overcome that at times, but still had to deal with some losses. So I think he understands losing and how to learn from it and move forward from it. The issue is once those losses pile up, like, it's, I mean, I watched this game today, and I said to myself, I was like, this team just has that stink of losing, and they don't know how to get it off. I knew before the Colts even tried to score the touchdown there at the end of the game that they were going to get it. They were going to go for two because it's what Jerod Mayo wouldn't do, and they were going to get it.
Oh, the two-point conversion was a no-brainer, 100%.
And this Patriots team just has that stink right now, and it's more an organizational thing than it is a Drake thing, and it's just unfortunate that he's kind of stuck in it.
I smell a developing lead for tomorrow morning on the Greg Hill Show on a Patriots Monday.
No, I have my lead cooked up, and I love Jerod Mayo, but by God, the end of the half was a disaster.
Yes, it was. Give me a couple of quick takes on this one as well. Would Coach Shime have gone for the 68-yard field goal, or would he have given his guy Drake a chance to step back, chuck it, and see if you could get a little Jaden Daniels Hail Maryland?
No, giving Joey Sly the opportunity there was the right call. The guy was 2 yards shy. You get two more yards on either of those pass plays, and he hits that kick. Like, it was dead down the middle. He was just a little short. So, like, I absolutely think giving Joey Sly that opportunity was the right call. Unfortunately, they, you know, did it. Again, bad handling of clock, bad handling of timeouts. It's inexperience at coaching. It's guys that just are learning on the job. They've never been in these situations. They don't know how to operate in these moments, and that leads to failure constantly, and that's kind of what you're seeing here. Hopefully they can learn from it. Hopefully there's improvement down the road, but I think letting Joey Sly take a rip at that was the right call.
Along those lines, you know, a lot of teams, change of possession is an opportunity to take a shot. For Alex Van Pelt, it was two runs, a pass play, and a quick punt. I thought that was the most important portion of the game. I thought they could put the game away after the Gonzalez pick, which was a great play. You had some momentum, and they just absolutely squashed that momentum and gave them the ball back. Do you think that ever changes? Is that a problem with Alex Van Pelt, Gerard Mayo? Is it a problem with lack of confidence in personnel? Like, what do you make of that?
I was yelling at the television. I was that upset. I got to tell you, I can't tell, because Gerard Mayo claims that Alex Van Pelt is the head coach of the offense. So it feels like Alex Van Pelt is making the calls, but at the same time, the head coach should be making the decisions there in crunch times at critical points in the game and at the end of half on how aggressive the team should be. And every single opportunity he is presented where he can be aggressive, where it makes sense to be aggressive, they choose not to be. They are extremely passive and cowardly at times, and that was the perfect example of it. 7 minutes left in the game, or 8 minutes left in the game, you get the ball back. You're up seven. You're at the 50-yard line. You have a chance to go down and put the nail in the coffin. End the game right there, because Drake May was absolutely cooking, and instead you took the ball out of his hands, got negative 3 yards on two runs, and then you get sacked on third down and you're screwed and you have to punt it back and you give the Colts a chance to drive down the field. Like, that was your opportunity to take the kill shot by moving the ball down the field with your quarterback, who was lights out. He was not missing. He wasn't putting the ball in jeopardy. He wasn't doing anything reckless. He was being smart the entire game. You took that away from him in a moment where you shouldn't have. I look back at that Bills game against the Chiefs. What do they do on 4th and 2 from their own 30, or from the Chiefs 30? They put the ball in the hands of Josh Allen. Tony Romo was saying it the entire broadcast. You give it to Josh and let him make the play. That's what you do with Drake May. He's the best player on the team. Don't take the football out of his hands.
The idea that they would take the ball out of the hands of their best offensive player when it was winning time, to me, is just one of the umpteen head scratchers out there as well. It was not Aberflusian, if you will, Scheim, which obviously cost someone their job.
It was close.
But I'm trending in that direction for sure. Okay, so as we wrap up here, my guy, what was your grade for the day with your boy, Drake May?
Yeah, I don't know if it was better than the Rams game. It was cleaner, just slightly cleaner than the Rams game. I think I'm going to go right at the exact same score. I think I'm going to go 90. Still didn't get the win, but God, you were so damn close. And at the end of the game, I mean, you didn't even really have an opportunity. You did the best you could with the, 11 seconds or whatever it was you had there at the very end of the game to give yourself a field goal chance.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't make any major mistakes. This was one of the cleanest games I have seen him play as a professional. So I will go with a flat 90. I can't give him anything more than that, because it's just, unfortunately, again, like he says, they didn't win the football game. That's what matters most. They didn't win the football game. So I can't go any higher than that. But I think it was as good as that Rams game. And the interception was not on him at all. That should never be credited as a quarterback. I hate that those are, because it's unfair to the quarterbacks and how well they play. So I will give Drake May a 90 for this performance, because he deserves to win that football game.
Well done, my man. Well done. I concur. Hart, 90, fair?
I think that is very fair. I don't think there was a lot that Drake May screwed up today. I think he was on his game. If everyone else was on their game the way he was on his game, they would have won this game, but they didn't.
Fair statement indeed. You can give him a follow at Scheim Time as well, and hear him, of course, as he helps produce and chimes in on occasion on the Greg Hill Morning Show. Tomorrow they'll be down at Gillette Stadium, 6A to 10A, and of course they'll have Coach Mayo and his thoughts following the game that leads into the bye week sometime in the 9 o'clock hour. My guy, as always, an absolute pleasure. Great job again this morning filling in for Arcand on WEEI Football Sunday. Look forward to hearing you more often in the captain's chair of the Enterprise and beyond, guy.
Appreciate you guys. Have a wonderful rest of your night. See ya.
You too. Shima calling in, or Schlime, or Scrime, Scrim, Scheme.
I like Schlime.
Schlime, yeah.
Like Schlimer. Remember Schlimer from Ghostbusters?
Okay, if you need to go a little bit early, that's...
that's
fine.
Thumbs down. Me.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say thumbs down. All right. So, Andy, we only have a couple minutes left here on the Six Rings postgame show, which,
you
of course,
make
as
me
we.
Rush me. You always rush
no,
me.
No, no, no. Actually, I'm giving you plenty of time here. You've got like 10 minutes almost. The Six Rings postgame show is, of course, brought to you by our friends at McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil delivery, as well as expert HVAC services. It's all available at McFarlandEnergy.com. All right. Time for Andy's world famous thumbs up, thumbs down. Who'd you like? Who'd you not? Who can stay and who can go, bro?
So we start our thumbs up where we just ended the interview with Chris Schleim. Drake May, he had a great day. He looked like a franchise quarterback. He continues to grow his air of confidence, I would say. The aura about him with which he goes about his business. Most throws are accurate. Most throws are completed. He looks calm, cool, collected. He runs. He looks not erratic when he runs. He looks like he's running with a plan. Especially, he seems well aware now of when it's man and when it's zone and his opportunities to run and take advantage of man defenses down the field and guys with their back turned to him. So Drake May leads the up list this week.
And just that aura around him.
Legit aura about it, Grunk. You are dead on. The tight ends, the veterans, Henry and Hooper, they are the most consistent aspects of the passing game with May. They have become, and we knew Henry would be and has been for years with Mac Jones and Drake May, whatever. Hooper, as you noted, has been a nice addition to that as sort of that second-tier veteran journeyman tight end addition.
I'm a fan.
I like what he's doing. I like what they are doing, and I think Drake May likes it because he continues to go to them in critical situations and with opportunities to score and things of that nature. Antonio Gibson. This is what we thought we were going to get from Antonio Gibson, or at least I thought they were going to get from Antonio Gibson. What we've seen the last couple weeks, a little burst, a little slash, a little ability to get, you know, 11-yard quick hitters. He definitely, as Adam Archuleta points out, has a different style than Ramondre Stevenson, and they can work together. I'm not sure they're quite thunder and lightning, but they are a nice little combo backfield when the offensive line is giving them opportunities. And I'll roll that in. I'll say the whole damn running game was good today. I thought Mondre had a nice day, and I thought the offensive line, which I've been very critical of, I thought there was room to run today for both guys. Mm-hmm. There was opportunities. I'll wait to see the analytics later, but I thought there were opportunities for these guys to hit their stride, to be 3 yards downfield before they had to do something.
The O-line was I won't say dominant or dominating in the running game, but they were moving some people
today.
They were doing a good job.
There were more holes than these guys have been used to most of the year. Good job at the line of scrimmage. Gonzo, another solid day, and Gonzo with what could have been, as we just mentioned, sort of the game-sealing play of the day. That was a great job undercutting that route, mm-hmm. seeing it develop. You could almost see he knew what was developing when he was still on the right side of the field and ended up picking it off like the middle left side of the field. Like, you could see the wheels working. Mm-hmm. That is athletic ability. That's route recognition. That's film work. He's a stud. He's going to be a stud. Also had a good Cleats for a Cause ad and part of that whole thing.
Drake May did too, by the way. I'm going to give Drake May. Drake May makes the list. They all do. All of them. But I thought Drake May, especially playing for Special Olympics Massachusetts in the Special Olympics Games. Great effort. Great little video he did to promote the cause too. And he hooked up with two of the athletes that he has been working hand in hand with before the game as well.
Yeah. No, they all did. And Drake May, Gonzo, dealing with mental health issues for men and sort of being a leader in that area, I think is pretty cool. He had a pass interference penalty late that kind of derailed a little momentum. There's a couple guys I want to kind of put on this list. Joey Sly I had on the list until the 25-yard missed field goal, which I still don't really know what happened there. He certainly wouldn't.
Something weird there. I'm with you. Something got gunked up there.
I need to see a little bit more replay of that, or I need somebody to kind of get something out of Joey Sly or somebody else. But that was weird. Other than that, I mean, he was hitting his field goals early. They were relatively short, but you still needed to pile up the points when they
preferably
were going.
You get six, not three. But
yeah, but no, that's not his fault. When he's asked to go out there, the damage is already done, my friend. It means the offense has failed, and it's his time to do his job. Alex Austin. He had a key pass defense late, some nice coverage. He's a guy that I know they liked late last year. I thought he struggled a little bit in the summer. Now he's back out there. maybe he can pull something together here to be a part of the mix heading into next year. I don't know, but I thought he had a competitive day back there as part of the
There's center. A glaring, growing need for cornerback number two on this team, for sure.
Cornerback number two, three, and four, in my opinion.
Yes. By the way, do you think Gonzo is playing at, I believe he's playing at a Pro Bowl level. Do you think he's playing at an All-Pro level?
I don't. I think he's Pro Bowl level probably, but I always struggle with the cornerback position. So much of it is hype and word of mouth and things of that nature, because none of us really watches 60 minutes of football of every good corner every week. Because I noticed that over the year, like, oh, Marcus Peters is great, or Stephon Diggs is not Stephon Diggs, the other Diggs, whatever the hell the Diggs
Trayvon
is. Trayvon Diggs is great, and Jalen Ramsey is great. And then you watch full games, and you're like, oh, he gets beat sometimes. Oh, he gives up catches sometimes. Mm-hmm. He gets beat. Like, so it's sometimes the hype gets ahead of the reality. But Christian Gonzalez is a great young corner. I am all in on Christian Gonzalez. If he continues to work and develop, he is going to be an All-Pro or a Defensive Player of the Year caliber cornerback moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, let's go to the down list. Jalen Polk continues to be there. It's never quite right when he's involved in the passing game.
Nope.
And I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how he pulls out of it, but he needs to snap into
it. It's a big game, because that ever since he didn't get that other foot down in the original Miami game.
I don't know what
the touchdown,
he needs to be like.
The front of
he needs to be smacked around and just like, boom, break out of this, snap out of this, something tough love. I don't know. I don't know how you do it, but he needs to get out of it. Laydon Robinson, couple holds. There was some good. There was some bad. I didn't think it was great, but hey, this line, the way they run blocked, maybe he was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The run defense in totality was not very good. They let Jonathan Taylor get whatever the hell he wanted for most of the day. That's all those guys up front. Christian Barmore, if we're being honest, if we're holding him to the you're on the field standard.
We should.
Christian Barmore has been underwhelming since he returned to the field from, admittedly, a health scare, blood clots, a big deal.
We haven't seen his disruptive line play like we got used to last year.
Not at all. And he's now been on this was game three, correct? He's now out there for 3 weeks. At some point, I need to hold him to his own standard. He's not been good enough. Christian Barmore needs to be better. You know what else needs to be better? The GD penalties. I am so sick of that little yellow box popping up after plays, especially touchdowns or scoring plays or first down plays or key plays. Oh, flag. Big surprise. Yes, the refs suck. Yes, maybe there's some that we can throw on them. But the reality is this team has way too many disgusting penalties, and I'm sick of it.
Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. I am with you all the way through. Excellent list. I'm glad we gave you a little extra time to put some voice and passion to it. There you go. That's the thumbs up and thumbs down that Andy Hart now prepares for the Six Rings postgame show exclusively since you hear him all the time here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. And let's wrap it today, Andy, with the Cars for Kids player of the game. Cars for Kids, the easiest way to get rid of your old car. Donate today and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K. 1-877 Cars for Kids, KARS, Cars for Kids. Drake May, your Kids player of the game.
Yeah, it was like 2 or 3 yards away from being Sly, Joey Sly.
He would have won it in the perpetuity.
Game. He wins a record, the whole thing. But no, Drake May, great day. If you're not excited about Drake May, then you're not a real Patriots fan.
But I've been so excited about him for so many weeks now. I just want to see. I want to see things go to that next level. I wanted to see the win. I wanted to see him get a chance to go for the Hail Mary. I want to see what he looks like with superior talent. I know I'm just getting a little impatient. I apologize.
It'll be next year. Just relax.
All right.
RELAX.
And there you have it, folks. The Six Rings postgame show live here on WEEI, Boston Sports Original. If you missed any of it, of course, download the Odyssey app. Listen to this and any of our fabulous shows at your leisure and your pleasure. Tomorrow on WEEI, it's a Patriots Monday. You'll have interviews galore. Gerard Mayo on the morning show. Is Christian Gonzalez on the midday show?
Damn right.
Man to man,
I believe.
Can't miss that. And, of course, tomorrow on the afternoon show, your old pal Fitzy filling in for Christian Arcand with Andy Hart. We will have Jonathan Jones and Drake May, hopefully in person with us at the stadium. Your final score once again, Colts 25, Patriots 24, on to the bye at 3-10.
sub to the pod if you can, at Six Rings Pod is a follow, also on the socials. If you enjoyed the show, congratulate Joe. If you didn't, blame Braverman. We're going to throw it to a commercial break. When we come back, you get a second chance to listen to the postgame pressers of Drake May and Gerard Mayo, and then it's Westwood One's coverage of Sunday Night Football. Good night, God bless, and thanks for listening, everybody.
See you.